Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. This is the first podcast we've done for a couple of weeks because myself and Alan have been away on our holidays, but very pleased to say Alan is back with us this morning. Alan, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, John. It's good to be back. Thoroughly refreshed from a motorcycle trip around Wales and a trip down to Cornwall.
Indeed. Myself, I was in Croatia enjoying the coast there. If you haven't been, well worth a trip. So as we come back, Alan, we're faced with significant volatility in these markets. I mean, it really sort of started last week when we got the inflation data from the United States, which pointed to an 8.6% inflation rate over the United States. And that's really sparked a flight to safety in some respects, and that safety being cash, because we're seeing sell-offs in both bonds and equities. And the S&P 500 so far this year is down 22%. So, Alan, we've got later on today the Federal Reserve meeting, and it looks as though if we're taking market expectations that we could be seeing a 75 basis points, that's 0.75% increase in interest rates. Last week, we were looking at a 50 basis points move, but as we saw that very strong inflation data coming through, there is now a market expectation that it's actually going to be the biggest rate hike since 1994 in a 75 basis point increase there, Alan. But we're actually seeing markets rising today, which, you know, given that we're going to see, you know, an extreme level of tightening from the Federal Reserve this evening and possibly again from the Bank of England tomorrow. We've got the ECB meeting at this very moment to discuss the volatility in markets. But we're seeing a rally today, Alan. I mean, my view would be that, you know, we're seeing sharp rises in interest rates, you know, not only here in the UK, but in the United States. I mean, do you think there's an element that the market's front-running this interest rate increase and, you know, possibly some in the coming months, because we have to fight inflation? Of course, we have to increase interest rates. You know, the central banks, if they didn't do that, would face dramatic criticism from the market. But do you think that people are now looking forward to, you know, possibly a mild recession here in the UK, possibly the same in the United States? And because they've raised rates so much so quickly, it gives them a lot of space to ease if we see a recession in the next few months.
Yeah, I think there is scope now, and I think also this is sending out a very strong signal that the banks, the central banks, will do all they can to battle inflation and to get on top of it. And of course, interest rates is a weapon at their disposal to do that. So it's certainly a chunky rise. But actually, in the UK, up to 80, I think about 80% of people are on fixed rate mortgages. So they won't immediately feel that. Of course, what it does mean is that the financial stocks and the banks, will be able to get more interest on the money they have on deposit, which will improve their balance sheets and their bottom lines. So I think the rise we're seeing today is a combination of a bit of relief from the market. You know, it's a strong medicine to take, but it's relief from the market that a course of action has been decided on, and also, of course, the benefits to the financial stocks. I think if I'm right, the banks are certainly trading higher today. Looking at Barclays, it's well ahead this morning. So I think we're going to see the banks benefit from that. So as investment, you know, as investment into the current status quo, banks could be something that you might want to look at. And certainly, I think going forward, we've still got a lot of uncertainty to come. And of course, we've got to see if this medicine works, You know, we've got to rein in inflation somehow. So I think you know, relief that action's been taken. Obviously, a bit of a boost for financial stocks, but still an awful lot of uncertainty and volatility to come.
Yes, I mean, looking at markets at the moment and what the Federal Reserve is doing, to me, it looks as though they're heading and planning to some extent a managed recession in the United States, yeah, and maybe here in the UK, because, you know, if they left inflation unchecked, you know, that would obviously have a detrimental impact on the economy, and that itself could push economies into recession, you know, whether that's later this year, early next year. But, you know, this sort of general optimism that we're seeing in markets, Alan, I mean, would you go as far as saying that it could actually provide a buying opportunity? If we see a very strong response from the Federal Reserve to the extent of a 75 basis point move today, and then maybe the Bank of England tomorrow, there's an expectation that they'll act as well, possibly moving rates up to around 1.25%. You know, is that, you know, when you've looked at what's happened so far this year, I mean, the FTSE's, you know, relatively flat, only down 3%, but well off the highs, as I mentioned before, the S&P 500 down 22%. You know, from a top level strategic point of view, if you're looking at your portfolio and you've seen a series of losses so far this year because they're taking that action, do you think that's going to give the confidence to see them, you know, have the market then look for a next leg higher, because it, you know, it's a managed situation, and yes, we may have a recession, but there's plenty of room to ease as we go forward. And, you know, is that something that could happen in the next couple of months in terms of an opportunity there for investors?
I certainly see an opportunity, yeah, but I think also it's likely that we'll tread water for some time. There may be some training gains. In other words, you know, we could go higher one week, but then again, I think there's going to be a pullback, because obviously it's strong medicine. We need to see if that medicine works and actually reins in inflation. And of course, the difference is this time around. I mean, back in the early 90s, we had this interest rate, interest rates went through the roof. And of course, at that point, the Bank of England, you know, on the domestic front, the Bank of England weren't in charge of setting the interest rates. You know, they were sort of set by the lenders, and interest rates just got spiraled out of control. Now the Bank of England has that control. It's a calculated medicine rather than the free for all we had in the 90s. And of course, after that, we had several years of recession in the doldrums, and we recovered. So I think the Bank of England and certainly the central banks won't want to see that situation repeated. So they'll want to be proactive and manage it going forward. So, but back to your question, yes, there will be opportunities. I see, you know, short-term gains. It's a trader's market because there are so many factors which are adding volatility into the mix and into the forward view that for traders, there is an opportunity to make money. But for the majority who are sitting on losses at the moment, it's hard to take, it's hard to look at. But as we see, you know, when the combination of when the medicine and the combination of strategies combine and start to work, then I think we'll see a recovery in the market. A cautious one, but that's the point at which I think you know, you'll see, or investors will start to see, their portfolios recovered. But certainly at these levels, there are still opportunities, and you might want to consider looking at financial stocks as investments that will start to benefit from the higher interest rates that they'll be earning on the money they have on deposit.
Indeed. Anyone that followed the adage of sell in May and go away and sitting on some cash may well have some opportunities in the coming months. So we're going to now move on to the equities that we're going to discuss today. We're obviously seeing positivity in the FTSE 100. And we're going to first look at one of the top risers on the day in Whitbread, Alan. They've had a relatively positive update and shares are up 5% this morning.
They've had a very strong update this morning, John. Shares are up. And, you know, if we look at Whitbread shares on the year, they've actually performed pretty well. I mean, they fell sharply, of course, in February. I think that was after the Ukraine invasion, sort of all the uncertainty, the attendant uncertainty with that. But since then, they've delivered a pretty solid performance. And of course, this morning we've got we had the trading update from the group for the first quarter of the year. And I mean, we're seeing really strong performances. You know, total UK accommodation, of course, the accommodation would be the Premier Inn, up 235% versus last year. I guess you could expect that because, of course, you know, with the lifting of COVID restrictions, like-for-like sales well ahead also. Food and beverage sales up 585% versus versus full year 2022. So, you know, really substantial improvement. But certainly, the group also noted a stronger than expected recovery in the German market following the lifting of COVID restrictions. Costs are expected to rise by some 25 million in the current year because, of course, a lot of the properties will be refurbished. There'll be investment in staff and upgrading of IT. But certainly, Chief Executive Alison Britton said, you know, it was a really strong performance. It's given the company increased confidence in delivering a strong first half to the year, and of course a strong performance for the remainder of the year. So that it's good to hear, you know, from one of our bellwether companies in the FTSE 100 that they're able to deliver such a strong performance in spite of all the volatility we're seeing now. So there are still some uncertainties. Margins are expected to rise later in the year for the group too. So, you know. And I think probably a lot of it is the fact that the Premier Inn brand and the price point and the expectations that we have with Premier Inn are spot on. They're still viewed as great value. You go somewhere, you want to stay overnight, you don't want to pay a fortune, you're going to go out and maybe grab a meal. So you take a Premier Inn room and, you know, it's cheap, cheerful, but it's functional. It does what it says on the tin. And I think that's the real strength of the brand. So Whitbread are obviously making the most of that. And certainly, I think going forward, you know, we're looking here now, shares, as I say, just slightly lower than they were this time last year. But there's a dividend yield of 1.3% to come with the group too. So, I think along with after that performance, I think there's every expectation that the group could go on and deliver and we could see the stock return to year highs. Which the stock has traded as high, of course, as £44 on the year. And we're currently sitting at just under £27 on the year. So, you know, potentially a big opportunity there.
Yes, certainly if we see that sustained recovery in the sector, that would be a good place to look in terms of Whitbread and the increasing demand that we're going to be seeing from travellers and holiday makers. So moving on now, Alan, we're going to look at a company I think we've discussed on the podcast previously, but maybe not for some time, Covango. They've had a number of quite interesting updates in the last couple of months. What's been happening there, Alan?
Covango are a very interesting company in that they are they're a mining exploration group centered in Botswana. The company have they've undertaken a lot of investor presentations recently updating on their projects, but the principal project the group has is a huge section in Botswana called the Kalahari Suta Zone, and it's a vast area, and of course, you know, when you get somewhere like that, where do you start? But over the past few years, the company have been undertaking extensive soil sampling, aeromagnetic surveys, ground magnetic surveys, and Covango are very good at employing the latest technology to discover, you know, what's under the ground, and also to put together a 3D model of of the asset. And what they found was that the geological model at the Kalahari Sutra Zone is very similar to the Norilsk mine in Siberia, both in terms of the geological foldings under the ground and also the great red spots that they've discovered. In addition, they recently announced they discovered an IOCG target. That's an iron ore, copper and gold anomaly. And of course, bear in mind that the size of the area, you know, this is still taking up a fraction of the overall area of the group. The group also raised some 750,000 in a placing a month or so ago, and of course that's going towards continuing the exploration costs both at the KSZ and also at their other projects. So the secondary, there was an announcement from the group today. Of course, they're drilling at the Dittau Farms project, and Dittau Farms is a joint venture with Power Metal Resources. It's a 50-50 joint venture put into an entity called Kanye Resources, what the group are discovering there, the Dittau Farms project has long been known to contain rare earths and other elements. It goes back to the 70s, in fact, when a company called Falcon Bridge actually first discovered them. But moving forward, the group have undertaken modelling and using the technology they've discovered. They're discovering now with the drilling they're undertaking that the rare earths are there in commercial quantities. So of course, as they go across the project and they go across and make further discoveries, then of course we then start to look at assimilating the data and bring it together to possibly put together a mineral resource estimate. Possibly too early to say that, but certainly that's the direction the group are going in at the moment. And then the group also have two copper projects on the South Ganzi Ridge, which is in southwestern Botswana. Two of the projects are also part of the Kanye Resources joint venture with Power Metal Resources, and indeed the work that's been undertaken there indicates that there are good grades of copper, which is of course very very encouraging. And the other two are with LVO Geo Explorers, who are a locally based company, and again those two assets will be developed later this year. I interviewed Ben Turney and Chief Ops Officer Brett Grist a little earlier on this year, and we spoke about these projects and the various stages they're at. And certainly, they said the LVR Explorers joint venture and of course the KCB Copper joint venture with Power Metal Resources would be revisited and developed later this year. Now onto the share price, of course, and again with the junior resource sector and also small cap companies across the board, they've taken an absolute hammering this year. And the shares for Kavango are now trading at 2.3p. The raise was done at 3p, so of course investors in that raise, which actually includes me, I was involved in that. We are sitting underwater at the moment, but that's the nature of the beast. The company is still pushing ahead, developing, and it's everything and the exploration work is being undertaken on schedule and delivered on time. So we'll see a turnaround in the markets at some point, and when we do, it'll be companies like Kavango that snap back really sharply, because given the Russia-Ukraine situation, of course, a huge amount of mineral resources have been taken out of the world market at a stroke, and that's resulted in a price squeeze. So the demand is there, and certainly Kavango Resources are right at the front of the push in Botswana in bringing those resources to market.
Yes, indeed. Just following on from your point there on, you know, junior resource companies, you know, they're at the forefront of market sentiment. Whenever we start to see market sentiment souring, as we have done this year, junior miners and explorers are always the first ones to feel the pinch in terms of their share price. And if you go back and you do rough correlations between consumer sentiment as well and investor sentiment data that you get, and you put a correlation against the junior resource sector. There is actually quite a pronounced correlation there. So as we're starting to see things in the wider economy look a little bit soggy, it's always expected that you see the resource sector fall, and when things start to pick up again and you start to see animal spirits come back, that's when you start to see these companies start to come back to life. And just to finish up, you mentioned their power metal resources. We're actually doing a podcast this week with Paul Johnson, so do keep an ear out for that. And they will be presenting at our UK Investor Magazine Summer Investor Evening that we're holding on the 30th of June at Haberdashers Hall in the City of London. There's still a few in-person tickets available. If you check out our website in the events section, there'll also be a link in the notes to this podcast where you can sign up. If you're not able to make it to London, it will be a hybrid event, so you'll be able to tune in virtually and catch the presentations there. So do check out the notes to the podcast. So, Alan, the final company that we're going to be discussing today, Sovereign Metals. We had Sap and Guy on the podcast a few weeks ago now, outlining the significance of the Cassia project. It's the world's largest titanium rutile deposit, and they've actually got the world's second largest graphite flake. The shares have currently suspended over in the Australian exchanges. They have a different way of things of doing here, pending an announcement. What do you think is happening here, Alan?
Well, it's all good news for Sovereign Metals. I mean, as you say, of course, Sapan presented the case to investors at UK Investor recently. It's been the most incredible discovery, of course, pioneered by Dr. Julian Stevens, who has been sort of banging the drum for the Cassia project, which is in Malawi, of course, the warm heart of Africa. And it turns out that the zone, which is a huge zone, it's about the size of Manchester. So if you can imagine the size of Greater Manchester, you know, this is the area it's covering. So of course, a project of that size has a huge impact on the local people there and the economy. And indeed, there's an ESG program underway there, advancing initiatives in Malawi, which of course includes water bores, boring water for the locals there, health, education, and so on. And this is being gradually rolled out. But what Dr. Stevens discovered there is quite incredible. And the initial scoping study attributed a value of some $810 or $15 million as a net present value, and that was prior to the mineral resource estimate there being literally trebled in value to 1.8 billion tons of rutile. And of course, rutile, as we said, John, it's the principal source of titanium dioxide, which has a multitude of applications. Titanium dioxide is available, also available in ilmenite, but approximately 45% of ilmenite contains titanium dioxide. With rutile, it's 95%. So, of course, it's a far more potent resource in that regard. Titanium dioxide, of course, has multitude of applications in aerospace. It's the brilliant white paint that you'll buy. It's titanium dioxide that gives you that brilliant white, and of course it's also used in protecting clean technologies such as wind turbines, that all of the towers are painted in titanium dioxide paint to protect them from the weather and protect from the elements. Applications in optics, in food coloring, I mean the list goes on. It's tremendous. But there are very few resource or rutile projects around the world, really, comparatively speaking. Sierra Rutile, of course, in Sierra Leone, and of course there's a project in Kenya. But the resource that both these projects have, and they're up and running, is dwarfed by Cassia, which is incredible. It's incredible find. But as you pointed out, John, the secondary mineral there is graphite, which has also has a multitude of applications, of course, in fire retardant material, in steel, steel mills. It's used to line the cauldrons. But of course, the most current and important application is that it constitutes some 40% of a modern lithium-ion battery. So it makes up a critical part of that. And with the second largest graphite resource in the world, as part of the Kassir project, it's an incredible find. So steps are underway. Of course, I mentioned the ESG framework, but Sovereign Metals is not only being picked up and recognised in the UK, it's also being picked up by a lot of the pundits in the US now. And indeed, there was Rick Hall was talking about the company the other day. The steps the company are taking to develop the asset, they're undertaking there's a major pre-feasibility study drill program there underway. A survey's been put together explaining how Kassir has the leading position or the leading market position in graphite. And also the green production methods the company will be employing to get the stuff to market. It's very well strategically located. It's close to what's referred to as the Nacala logistics corridor. So down from Lilongwe, which is pretty well central to the Sovereign Metals Kassir project, there's a rail route down and then straight out to the Nacala deep water ports on the coast. And that's, of course, in Mozambique. So it's very easy to get the stuff out and get it to market. But as you said at the start, John, there has been a trading halt pending an announcement, and that trading halt is pending an updated scoping study. So I would imagine that there's going to be more good news, more resource possibly, but of course we'll wait and see. The stock will commence trading again. I think it's tomorrow. So once we have that news, then of course we'll know what the story is. But certainly in share price terms, the shares haven't taken too much of a battering, really. I mean, the company is dual listed, of course, in the ASX. Came to market at just over 30p here last year, and the shares have traded. We had the peak, of course, at 48p in April when we had the mineral resource upgrade, but it's since come back, and we're now trading at just under the IPO price, not at the year low, which I hasten to add is 22p, but at 29p. So in no way, you know, given the upgrades that we've seen, in no way is that any way reflected in the market capitalization, which at 210 million Aussie dollars stands at probably about 100,000 sterling at present. So the size, given that the previous net present value came in at 810 million US dollars, we're well shy of that right now. So I think, you know, when the scoping study comes out, we'll see a figure well in advance of that. Also worth noting as well, an announcement today that the Sprott Fund in Australia was already a 10% shareholder in Sovereign Metals. It's increased its shareholding to 11.84%, just under 12%. So that's significant. Obviously, they see a huge future for Sovereign Metals, and I'm sure once we get the scoping study announcement tomorrow, we're going to see the share price move correspondingly. But I think it's offering great value right now.
So, Alan, with Sovereign, we've obviously touched on the significance and size of the deposits there, but obviously to start, you know, production there, you know, it is a low cost mining technique that they're able to utilize there, as well as, you mentioned there, the strong infrastructure. But of course, that's going to require a significant level of capital to do that. You know, due to the size significance of that Kassir project, do you think Sovereign becomes a takeover target at some point?
I think it absolutely could become a takeover target. But let's not forget also that there will be takeoff agreements coming in thick and fast, I would imagine, once we get further down the road. The company's also got a takeoff agreement with Haskell, which is the one of the world's largest producers of welding equipment. And of course, rutile is a key part of welding. So so I imagine we're going to see some takeoff agreements. And often what happens is when these agreements come in, that the company brings funding with it. So it may well be that with the funding it's able to raise from initiatives like that, that the company can fund its own development. But given the size of the project, it will require considerable infrastructure. And of course, that's got to be put together once the pre-feasibility study, then the feasibility study is completed. So there's still some way to go. But given where the valuation is now, you know, we're setting at a fraction of what this will actually be worth when it's up and running.
Indeed, indeed. Certainly one to watch and keep an eye out for that announcement, which should come in the coming days. So just as a recap, the stocks we discussed today, first of all, was Whitbread with a ticker of WTB. It was then Kavango Resources with a ticker of KAV. And just then was Sovereign Metals, which trades under the ticker of SVML. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you very much, John.
So just as a final note, I mentioned there the upcoming Summit Investor Evening on the 30th of June. Do check out the notes to this podcast. We'll be able to find a link to secure a ticket either virtually or in person. Hope to see you there. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.